When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chapter 12 of 2 Years in the Forbidden City. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by J.C. Guan. 2 Years in the Forbidden City by Princess De Ling. Chapter 12. The Empress and Mrs. Conjure. On the 26th day of the fifth moon, during the morning audience, Prince Qing told Her Majesty that Mrs. Conjure, the wife of the American minister to Beijing, had asked for a private audience, and would Her Majesty please mention a day. She told him not to give any answer until the next day, just to give her time to think it over. I was sitting behind the large screen, listening, but the other court ladies made too much noise, so Her Majesty ordered them not to say a word during the audience. I was very glad myself, because I could listen to some of the interesting conversations between the Empress Dowager and her ministers. After the audience, Her Majesty ordered her lunch to be served on the top of the hill at Bai Yun Dian, Spreading Cloud Pavilion. She said that she preferred to walk, so we followed her very slowly. To get to this place, we had to mount 272 steps, besides 10 minutes climbing over rough stones. She did not seem to mind the climbing part at all. It was the funniest thing to see two little eunuchs on either side to support her arms, trying to keep pace with her. I noticed that she was very much preoccupied, and did not speak to any of us. When we arrived at our destination, we were very tired and quite exhausted. Her Majesty, who was a good walker herself, laughed at us. She was always very much pleased when she excelled in games of skill or endurance. She said, "You see, I am old and can walk much faster than you young people. You are all no use. What is the matter with you?" Her Majesty was very fond of receiving compliments. I had been there long enough to know and had learned to say things which would please her. She also hated anyone to pay her compliments at the wrong moment, so one had to be very careful even in paying her compliments. This Spreading Cloud Pavilion was a beautiful place. It had an open space in front of the building, just like one of the courtyards, with pink and white oleanders all over the place. There was a porcelain table, and several porcelain stools. Her Majesty sat on one of her own yellow satin stool, and was drinking her tea in silence. It was very windy that day, although the sky was blue with warm sunshine. Her Majesty sat there, just for a few minutes, and then said it was too windy, and went into the building. I was more than glad to go in, too, and whispered to the young empress that I thought the wind might blow off my headdress. The eunuchs brought the luncheon, and placed everything upon the table. The young empress made a sign for us to follow her, which we did. When we came to the back veranda, we sat down on the window seats. I will explain about these seats. All the windows were built low at the palace, and on the veranda there was something like a bench built along the window, about a foot wide. There were no chairs to be seen, excepting Her Majesty's thrones. The young empress asked me whether I had noticed that Her Majesty had something on her mind. I told her that perhaps she was thinking about the private audience which Prince Qing had mentioned that morning. She said that I had guessed right, and asked, "Do you know anything about this audience? When will it take place?" I said that Her Majesty had not yet given her answer. By this time, Her Majesty had finished eating and was walking up and down the room, watching us eating. She came over to my mother and said, "I am just wondering why Mrs. Conger asks for a private audience. Perhaps she has something to say to me. I would like to know just what it is, so I can prepare an answer." My mother said that probably Mrs. Conger had someone visiting her who wished to be presented to Her Majesty. "No, it can't be that, because they must give the list of names of those who wish to come to the palace. I don't mind the formal audiences, but I don't think that I should have private ones at all. I don't like to be questioned, as you all know. The foreigners are, of course, very nice and polite, according to their own way, but they cannot compare with us, so far as etiquette is concerned. I may be conservative in saying that I admire our custom, and will not change it as long as I live. You see, our people are taught to be polite from their earliest childhood, and look back at the oldest teachings and compare them with the new. People seem to like the latter the best. I mean that the new idea is to be Christians, to chop up their ancestral tablets and burn them. I know many families here who have broken up because of the missionaries, who are always influencing the young people to believe their religion. Now I will tell you why I feel uneasy about this audience is because we are too polite to refuse anyone who asks any favors in person. The foreigners don't seem to understand that. I'll tell you what I will do. Whenever they ask me anything, I'll simply tell them that I am not my own boss, but have to consult with my ministers. That, although I am the Empress Dowager of China, I must also obey the law. To tell the truth, I like Madame Uchida, wife of the Japanese minister to Beijing, very much. She is always very nice, and doesn't ask any silly questions. Of course, the Japanese are very much like ourselves, not at all forward. Last year, before you came to the court, a missionary lady came with Mrs. Conger, and suggested that I should establish a school for girls at the palace. I did not like to offend her, and said that I would take it into consideration. Now, just imagine it for a moment. Wouldn't it be foolish to have a school at the palace? Besides, where am I going to get so many girls to study? I have enough to do as it is. I don't want all the children of the imperial family studying at my palace. Her Majesty laughed while she was telling us this, and everyone else laughed, too. She said, "I am sure you will laugh. Mrs. Conger is a very nice lady. America is always very friendly towards China, and I appreciate their nice behavior at the palace during the 26th year of Guangxu, 1900. But I cannot say that I love the missionaries, too. Li Lianying told me that these missionaries here give the Chinese a certain medicine, and that after that they wish to become Christians, and then they would pretend to tell the Chinese to think it over very carefully, for they would never force anyone to believe their religion against their own will. Missionaries also take the poor Chinese children and gouge their eyes out and use them as a kind of medicine." I told her that that was not true, that I had met a great many missionaries, and that they were very kind-hearted and willing to do anything to help the poor Chinese. I also told her what they had done for the poor orphans, given them a home, food, and clothing, that sometimes they went into the interior and found the blind children who might be useless to their parents, and when they get them, they have to support them. I know several cases like that. These country people offer their deformed children to the missionaries, as they are too poor to feed and take care of them. I told her about their schools, and how they helped the poor people. Her Majesty then laughed, and said, "Of course, I believe what you say, but why don't these missionaries stay in their own country, and be useful to their own people?" I thought it would be of no use for me to talk too much, but at the same time I would like her to know of the dreadful times some of the missionaries had in China. Some time ago, two of them were murdered at Wushui in June, 1892, a little below Hankou, the church being burnt down by the mob. My father was appointed by the viceroy, Zhang Zhidong, to investigate the matter. After much trouble, he caught three of the murderers, and according to Chinese law, they were put to death by hanging in wooden cages, and the government paid an indemnity to the families of the murdered missionaries. The year after, 1893, a Catholic church was burnt down at Machang, on the Yangtze, near Yichang. The mob said they saw many blind children at the church, who were made to work after having their eyes gouged out. The prefect of Yichang province said it was true that missionaries did get the Chinese children's eyes for making medicine, so my father suggested having those blind children brought into the Yamen and asked them. The prefect was a most wicked man, and was very anti-foreign also. He gave the poor children plenty of food, and taught them to say that the missionaries did gouge their eyes out, but when they were brought in the next day, they said that the missionaries treated them very kindly, and gave them a nice home, good food and clothing. They said they were blind long before they became Catholics, and also said that the prefect had taught them to say that the missionaries were cruel to them, which was not true. The blind children begged to go back to the school, and said that they were very happy there. Her Majesty said, "That may be all right for them to help the poor and relieve their suffering. For instance, like our great Buddha Zhulai, who fed the hungry birds with his own flesh. I would love them if they would leave my people alone. Let us believe our own religion. Do you know how the Boxer Rising began? Why, the Chinese Christians were to blame. The Boxers were treated badly by them, and wanted revenge. Of course, that is always the trouble with the low class of people. They went too far, and at the same time thought to make themselves rich by setting fire to every house in Beijing. It made no difference whose house. They wanted to burn so long as they could get money. These Chinese Christians are the worst people in China. They rob the poor country people of their land and property, and the missionaries, of course, always protect them, in order to get a share themselves. Whenever a Chinese Christian is taken to the magistrate's Yamen, he is not supposed to kneel down on the ground and obey the Chinese law, as others do, and is always very rude to his own government officials. Then these missionaries do the best they can to protect them, whether he is wrong or not, and believe everything he says, and make the magistrate set the prisoner free. Do you remember that your father established rules in the 24th year of Guangxu, how the Chinese officials should treat the bishops whenever they had dealings with each other? I know the common class of people become Christians, also those who are in trouble, but I don't believe that any of the high officials are Christians." Her Majesty looked around and whispered, "Kang Youwei, the reformer of 1898, tried to make the emperor believe that religion. No one shall believe as long as I live. I must say that I admire the foreigners in some way. For instance, their navies and armies and engineers. But as regards civilization, I should say that China is the first country by all means. I know that many people believe that the government had connections with the Boxers, but that is not true. As soon as we found out the trouble, we issued several edicts and ordered the soldiers to drive them out. But they had gone too far already. I made up my mind not to go out of the palace at all. I am an old woman, and did not care whenever I died or not. But Prince Tuang and Duke Lan suggested that we should go at once. They also suggested that we should go in disguise, which made me very angry, and I refused. After the return of the court to Beijing, I was told that many people believed that I did go in disguise, and said that I was dressed in one of my servant's clothes, and rode in a broken cart drawn by a mule, and that this old woman servant of mine was dressed as the Empress Dowager, and rode in my sedan chair. I wonder who made that story up. Of course everyone believed it, and such a story would get to the foreigners in Beijing without any trouble. Now to come back to the question of the Boxer Rising. How badly I was treated by my own servants. No one seemed anxious to go with me, and a great many ran away before the court had any idea of leaving the capital at all, and those who stayed would not work, but stood around and waited to see what was going to happen. I made up my mind to ask and see how many would be willing to go, so I said to everyone, "If you servants are willing to go with me, you can do so, and those who are not willing can leave me." I was very much surprised to find that there were very few standing around listening. Only 17 eunuchs, 2 old women servants, and 1 servant girl, that was Shochu. Those people said they would go with me, no matter what happened. I had 3,000 eunuchs, but they were nearly all gone before I had the chance of counting them. Some of the wicked ones were even rude to me, and threw my valuable vases on the stone floor, and smashed them. They knew that I could not punish them at that important moment, for we were leaving. I cried very much, and prayed for our great ancestors' souls to protect us. Everyone knelt with me and prayed. The young empress was the only one of my family who went with me. A certain relative of mine, whom I was very fond of, and gave her everything she asked, refused to go with me. I knew that the reason she would not go was because she thought the foreign soldiers would catch up the runaway court and kill everyone. After we had been gone about 7 days, I sent 1 eunuch back to find out who was still in Beijing. She asked this eunuch whether there were any foreign soldiers chasing us, and whether I was killed. Soon after, the Japanese soldiers took her palace and drove her out. She thought she was going to die anyway, and as I was not yet assassinated, she might catch up with the court and go with us. I could not understand how she travelled so fast. One evening, we were staying at a little country house, when she came in with her husband, a nice man. She was telling me how much she had missed me, and how very anxious she had been all that time to know whether I was safe or not, and cried. I refused to listen to what she was saying, and told her plainly that I did not believe a word. From that time, she was finished for me. I had a very hard time, travelling in a sedan chair from early morning, before the sun rose, until dark, and in the evening had to stop at some country place. I am sure you would pity me, old as I am, that I should have had to suffer in that way. The emperor went all the way in a cart, drawn by a mule, also the empress. I went along, and was praying to our great ancestors for protection. But the emperor was very quiet, and never opened his mouth. One day, something happened. It rained so much, and some of the chair-carriers ran away. Some of the mules died suddenly. It was very hot, and the rain was pouring down on our heads. 5 small eunuchs ran away also, because we were obliged to punish them the night before, on account of their bad behavior to the magistrate, who did all he could to make me comfortable. But, of course, food was scarce. I heard these eunuchs quarreling with the magistrate, who bowed to the ground, begging them to keep quiet, and promised them everything. I was, of course, very angry. Traveling under such circumstances, one ought to be satisfied that one was provided for. It took us more than a month before we reached Shi'an. I cannot tell you how fatigued I was, and was, of course, worrying very much, which made me quite ill for almost 3 months. So long as I live, I cannot forget it. We returned to Beijing nearly in the 28th year of Guangxu, and I had another dreadful feeling when I saw my own palace again. Oh, it was quite changed. A great many valuable ornaments broken, or stolen. All the valuable things at the Sea Palace had been taken away, and someone had broken the fingers on my white jade Buddha, to whom I used to worship every day. Several foreigners sat on my throne and had their photos taken. When I was at the Shi'an, I was just like being sent into exile, although the viceroy's yamen was prepared for us. But the building was very old, damp, and unhealthy. The emperor became ill. It would take a long time to tell you everything. I thought I had enough trouble, but this was the worst. When I have time, I will tell you more about it. I want you to know the absolute truth. Now, let us come back to the question of Mrs. Conger's private audience. There must be something special, but I hope that she will not ask for anything, for I hate to refuse her. Can you guess what it is? I told Her Majesty that there could not be anything special. Besides, Mrs. Conger considered herself to be a person who knew Chinese etiquette very well, and I didn't believe she would ask for anything at all. Her Majesty said, "The only objection I have is that Mrs. Conger always brings one of the missionaries as her interpreter, when I have your mother, your sister, and yourself, which I think would be sufficient. I don't think it is right for her to do that. Besides, I cannot understand their Chinese very well. I like to see the ladies of the diplomatic body sometimes, but not the missionaries. I will stop that when the opportunity comes." The next morning, Prince Ching told Her Majesty that the American admiral and Mrs. Evans and Soot wished to be presented to her. The American minister asked two private audiences. He said he had made a mistake by telling her that Mrs. Conger had asked an audience for herself the day before. After the regular morning audience was over, Her Majesty laughed and said, "Didn't I tell you yesterday that there must be a reason for asking an audience? I rather would like to meet the American admiral and his wife." Turning to us, she said, "Be sure to fix everything up pretty, change everything in my bedroom, so as not to show them our daily life." We all said, "Sure, yes," but we knew it was going to be a hard task to turn the palace upside down. It was just the night before the appointed audience. We started to work taking off the pink silk curtains from every window and changing them for sky blue, the color she hated. Then we changed the cushions on the chairs to the same color. While we were watching the eunuchs doing the work, several of them came into the room, carrying a large tray full of clocks. By this time, Her Majesty had come into the room and ordered us to remove all her white and green jade Buddhas and take some of the jade ornaments away, for those things were sacred, and no foreigners should see them. So we replaced them with these clocks instead. We also took away the three embroidered door curtains and changed them for ordinary blue satin ones. I must explain that these three curtains were sacred, too. They were embroidered to represent 500 Buddhist deities on old gold satin and had been used by Emperor Tolkwang. Her Majesty believed that by hanging these curtains at her door, they would guard against evil spirits entering her room. The order was that one of us should remember to place them back again when the audience was over. We fixed every piece of furniture in her bedroom. Her toilet table was the most important thing. She would not let anyone see it, not even the wives of the officials who came in. So, of course, we had to put it in a safe place and lock it up. We changed her bed from pink color into blue. All her furniture was made of sandalwood, also carvings on her bed. This sandalwood, before it was made into furniture, was placed in different temples to be sanctified, so of course no foreigner could see it. As we could not take this carving from her bed, we covered it up with embroidered hangings. While we were working, Her Majesty came in and told us not to hurry in her bedroom, because the audience the next day would only be for Admiral Rubley Evans and his staff, and they would not visit the private rooms. The audience for Mrs. Evans and the other ladies would be the day after. She said it was important to see that the audience hall was fixed up properly. She said, "Place the only carpet we have here in the hall. I don't like carpets anyway, but it cannot be helped." After we had finished, Her Majesty started to tell us what to wear for the ladies' audience. She said to me, "You need not come to the throne tomorrow. There will be only gentlemen. I will get one of the ministers from Wai Wu Pu, Bureau of Foreign Affairs. I don't want you to talk to so many strange men. It is not the Manchu custom. These people are all strangers. They might go back to America and tell everybody what you look like." At the same time, Her Majesty gave orders for the imperial yellow gown to be brought in the next day, for the gentleman's audience. she said that she must dress in her official robe for this occasion. This robe was made of yellow satin, embroidered with gold dragons. She wore a necklace composed of 108 pearls, which formed part of this official dress. She said, "I don't like to wear this official robe. It is not pretty, but I am afraid I will have to." She said to all of us, "You need not dress especially." The next morning, Her Majesty got up early, and was busier than ever. It seemed to me that whenever we had an audience, we always had so much trouble. Something was sure to go wrong and make Her Majesty angry. She said, "I want to look nice and be amiable, but these people always make me angry. I know the American admiral will go home and tell his people about me, and I don't want him to have a wrong impression." It took her almost 2 hours to dress her hair, and by that time it was too late for her usual morning audience, so she proposed holding that after the foreigners had gone away. She looked at herself in the looking-glass, with her imperial robe on, and told me that she did not like it, and asked me whether I thought the foreigners would know that it was an official robe. "I look too ugly in yellow. It makes my face look the same color as my robe," she said. I suggested that it was only a private audience. If she wished to dress differently, it would not matter at all. She seemed delighted, and I was afraid lest I had not made a proper suggestion. But anyway, I was too busy to worry. Her Majesty ordered that her different gowns should be brought in, and after looking them over, she selected one embroidered all over with the character Sho, long life, covered with precious stones and pearls, on pale green satin. She tried it on, and said that it was becoming to her, so she ordered me to go to the jewel-room and get flowers to match her hair. On one side of the headdress was the character Sho, and on the other side was a bat. The bat in China is considered to be lucky. Of course, her shoes, handkerchiefs, and everything else were embroidered in the same way. After she was dressed, she smiled and said, "I look all right now. We had better go to the audience hall and wait for them, and at the same time we can play a game of dice." Then, to us all, she said, "All of you will stay at the back of the screen during the audience. You can see all right, but I don't wish that you should be seen." The eunuchs had laid the map down on the table and were just going to commence playing dice when one of the high-rank eunuchs came into the hall and, kneeling down, said that the American admiral had arrived at the palace gate, together with the American minister. 10 or 12 people altogether. Her Majesty smiled and said to me, "I thought it was just going to be the American minister and the admiral, and one or two of his staff. Who can the rest of the people be? However, never mind, I will receive them anyway." We helped her to mount her throne upon the dais, fixed her clothes, and handed her the paper containing the speech she was to give. Then we went back of the screen, with the young empress. It was so very quiet, not a sound anywhere, that we could hear the boots of the visitors as they walked over the stones in the courtyard. We were peeping from behind the screen, and could see several of the princes mounting the steps, conducting these people to the hall. The admiral and the American minister came in and stood in a line. They bowed 3 times to the Empress Dowager. The emperor was also on his throne, sitting at her left hand. His throne was very small, just like an ordinary chair. Her Majesty's speech was simply to welcome the admiral to China. They then came up to the dais and shook hands with their majesties, ascending on one side and retiring down the other. Prince Qing took them into another palace building, where they had lunch, and the audience was over. It was very simple and formal. After the audience was over, Her Majesty said that she could hear us laughing behind the screen, and that maybe the people would talk about it, and did not like it at all. I told her that it was not myself who laughed. She said, "The next time, when I have men in audience, you need not come into the audience hall at all. Of course, it is different when I have my own people at the morning audiences. Her Majesty did not go to her bedroom that afternoon. She said she wanted to wait until these people had gone and hear what they had to say. After a couple of hours, Prince Qing came in and reported that they had lunched, and that they were very pleased to have seen Her Majesty, and had gone away. I must here explain that the Admiral had entered by the left gate of the palace. The middle gate was only used for their Majesties, with one exception, viz., in the case of anyone presenting credentials. Then they entered by the center gate. The Admiral left by the same gate he had entered. Her Majesty asked Prince Qing whether he had showed them around the palace buildings or not. This was in the summer palace. And what they had thought about it? Did they say anything? And were they pleased or not? She said to Prince Qing, "You can go now, and make the necessary preparations for the ladies' audience next day." That same evening, Her Majesty said to us, "You must all dress alike tomorrow, and wear your prettiest clothes. These foreign ladies who are coming to the palace may never see us again, and if we don't show them what we have now, we will not have another opportunity." She ordered us all, including the young empress, to wear pale blue, also the secondary wife of the emperor. She said to me, "If the ladies ask who the secondary wife is, you can tell them, but if they don't ask, I don't want you to introduce her to them at all. I have to be very careful. These people at the palace here are not used to seeing so many people, and they might not have nice manners, and the foreigners will laugh at them." Then she said to us again, "I always give presents when ladies come to the court, but don't know whether I will give this time or not, for at the last audience I did not give anything at all." Addressing me, she said, "You can prepare some pieces of jade, in case I need them. Put them in a nice box, and have them all ready. Don't bring them to me until I ask for them." She said, "We have talked enough now, and you can all go to rest." We curtsied good night. I was only too glad to go to my own room. The next morning, everything went on very nicely, and there was no trouble at all. Her Majesty was well satisfied, for we had all taken great care in fixing ourselves up. She said to me, "You never put enough paint on your face. People might take you for a widow. You will have to paint your lips, as that is the custom. I don't need you yet, so go back and put some more paint on." So I went back to my room and painted myself just like the rest of them. But I could not help laughing at seeing myself so changed. By the time I got to her room again, she said, "Now you look all right. If you think that powder is expensive, I will buy some for you." She said that with a laugh, for she always liked to tease me. By the time Her Majesty had finished her toilet, one of the ladies brought a number of gowns for her to select one from. She said that she would wear pale blue that day. She looked over 20 or 30 gowns, but found nothing which suited her, so she gave orders for some more to be brought in. Finally, she chose a blue gown embroidered with 100 butterflies, and wore a purple sleeveless jacket, which was also embroidered with butterflies. At the bottom of this gown were pearl tassels. She wore her largest pearls, one of which was almost as large as an egg, and was her favorite jewel. She only wore this on special occasions. She wore 2 jade butterflies on each side of her headdress. Her bracelets and rings were also all designed in butterflies. In fact, everything matched. Among her beautiful jewels, she always wore some kind of fresh flowers. White jessamine was her favorite flower. The young empress and the court ladies were not allowed to wear fresh flowers at all unless given to them by Her Majesty as a special favor. We could wear pearls and jade, etc., but she said that the fresh flowers were for her, her idea being that we were too young, and might spoil fresh flowers if we wore them. After she was dressed, we went into the audience hall. She ordered her cards to be brought in, as she wanted to play solitaire. She talked all the time she was playing, and said that we must all be very nice and polite to the American ladies, and show them everywhere. She said, "It doesn't matter now, for we have everything changed." She said, "I want to laugh myself. What is the use of changing everything? They will imagine we are always like this. By and by, if they question you about anything, just tell them that it is not so, and that we change everything at each audience, just to give them a bit of surprise. You must tell it some day, otherwise no one will know it at all, and the trouble will not be worth the while." It was a private audience for ladies, and Her Majesty did not use the big throne, but was sitting on her little throne at the left side of the audience hall, where she received her own ministers every morning. The Emperor was standing. A eunuch came in, the same as the day before, and announced that the ladies had arrived at the palace gate, 9 in all. Her Majesty sent some of the court ladies to meet them in the courtyard, and bring them to the audience hall, which they did. I was standing at the right side of Her Majesty's chair, and could see them mounting the steps. Her Majesty whispered to me, and asked, "Which one is Mrs. Evans?" As I had never seen the lady, I answered that I could not tell, but when they got nearer, I saw a lady walking with the American minister's wife, and concluded that she must be Mrs. Evans, and told Her Majesty. As they got nearer, Her Majesty said, "Again that missionary lady with Mrs. Conger. I think she must like to see me. She comes every time. I will tell her I am very glad to see her always, and if she understands what I mean." Mrs. Conger shook hands with Her Majesty, and presented Mrs. Evans, and also the wives of the American officers. I was watching Her Majesty, and saw that she was very nice and amiable, with such a pleasant smile, so different from her everyday manner. She told them she was delighted to see them. Her Majesty ordered the eunuchs to have chairs brought in for the ladies, and at the same time other eunuchs brought in tea. Her Majesty asked Mrs. Evans whether she liked China, what she thought of Beijing, how long she had been there, how long she was going to stay, and where she was staying. I was so accustomed to Her Majesty's questions that I knew exactly what she would ask. Mrs. Conger told her interpreter to tell Her Majesty that she had not seen her for such a long time, and inquired about Her Majesty's health. Her Majesty said to me, "You tell Mrs. Conger that I am in good health, and that I am delighted to see her. It is a pity that I cannot hold an audience more frequently, otherwise I could see more of her." She continued, "The Imperial Princess, her adopted daughter, daughter of Prince Gong, will accompany them to lunch." This ended the audience. Lunch was served at the back of her own palace building, Yang Yun Xuan, the place where the clouds gather to rest. This room was specially furnished as a banqueting room where refreshments could be served. All the court ladies went to the lunch, except Her Majesty, the young empress, and the secondary wife. It had taken me 2 hours to fix the table for the luncheon. Her Majesty ordered that a white foreign tablecloth should be used, as it looked cleaner. The eunuchs' gardeners had decorated the table with fresh flowers, and Her Majesty gave instructions as to how the seats were to be placed. She said, "Mrs. Evans is the guest of honor. Although Mrs. Conger is the wife of the American minister, she is more of a resident, so Mrs. Evans must have the principal seat." She also told me to arrange to seat everybody according to their respective ranks. The Imperial Princess and Princess Shun, Her Majesty's niece, sister of the young empress, were hostesses, and were to sit opposite each other. We placed golden menu holders and little gold plates for almonds and watermelon seeds. The rest, all silverware, including chopsticks. Her Majesty ordered that foreign knives and forks should be provided also. The food was served in Manchu style, and was composed of 24 courses, besides sweetmeats, candies, and fruits. Her Majesty instructed us that only the best champagne was to be served. She said, "I know that foreign ladies love to drink." I think I was the only one who was really happy to meet these ladies, more so than the rest of the court ladies, the reason being that Her Majesty lectured them too severely, telling them how to behave, so that they had grown to hate the very mention of a foreign audience. While we were eating, a eunuch came in and told me that Her Majesty was waiting at her private palace, and that I should bring these ladies there after the lunch was over. So when we had finished, we entered her own palace, and found her waiting there for us. She got up and told me to ask Mrs. Evans whether she had had anything to eat, that the food was not very good. This is a custom with the Chinese when entertaining, always to underrate the food. She said that she would like to show Mrs. Evans her private apartments, so that she could form some idea of the way we lived. So she took Mrs. Evans to one of her bedrooms. She invited Mrs. Evans and Mrs. Conger to sit down, and the eunuchs brought in tea, as usual. Her Majesty asked Mrs. Evans to stay a little while in Beijing, and to visit the different temples. She said, "Our country, although very old, has not much fine buildings as they are in America. I suppose you will find everything very strange. I am rather too old now, otherwise I would like to travel around the world. I have read much about different countries, but of course there is nothing like visiting the different places and seeing them for yourself. However, one cannot tell. I may be able to go after all, by and by, but I am afraid to leave my own country. By the time I returned, I should not know the place any more, I'm afraid. Here, everything seems to depend on me. Our emperor is quite young." She then turned and crossed us to take these ladies to visit the different buildings of the palace, also the famous temple of the King of Dragons. This is on a little island in the center of the lake of the Summer Palace. Mrs. Conger said that she had something to ask Her Majesty, and told the missionary lady to proceed. While Mrs. Conger was speaking to this lady, Her Majesty became rather impatient, as she wanted to know what they were talking about, so she asked me. It was very hard for me to listen to both of the ladies and to Her Majesty at the same time. The only words I heard were the portrait, so I guessed the rest. Before I had a chance to tell Her Majesty, this missionary lady said, "Mrs. Conger has come with the special object of asking permission to have Her Majesty's portrait painted by an American lady artist, Miss Carl, as she is desirous of sending it to the St. Louis exhibition, in order that the American people may form some idea of what a beautiful lady the Empress Dowager of China is. Miss Carl is the sister of Mr. F. Carl, who was for so many years Commissioner of Customs in Chefu." Her Majesty looked surprised, for she had been listening very carefully whilst this lady was talking. She did not like to say that she did not quite understand, so she turned to me, as had been previously arranged, a sign for me to interpret. I did not, however, do so immediately, so Mrs. Conger told her missionary friend to repeat the request, in case Her Majesty had not quite understood it. Her Majesty then said to me, "I cannot quite understand what this lady says. I think perhaps you can tell me better." So I explained everything, but I knew that Her Majesty did not know what a portrait was like, as, up to that time, she had never even had a photograph taken of herself. I must here explain that in China a portrait is only painted after death, in memoriam of the deceased, in order that the following generations may worship the deceased. I noticed that Her Majesty was somewhat shocked when the request was made known to her. I did not want Her Majesty to appear ignorant before these foreign ladies, so I pulled her sleeve and told her that I would explain everything to her later. She replied, "Explain a little to me now." This was spoken in the court language, which the visitors were unable to understand, it being somewhat different from the ordinary Chinese language. This enabled Her Majesty to form some idea of the conversation, so she thanked Mrs. Conger for her kind thought, and promised to give her answer later. She said to me, "Tell Mrs. Conger that I cannot decide anything alone, as she is probably aware that I have to consult with my ministers before deciding anything of an important character. Tell her that I have to be very careful not to do anything which would give my people an opportunity to criticize my actions. I have to adhere to the rules and customs of my ancestors. I noticed that Her Majesty did not seem inclined to discuss the subject further at the moment. Just then the head eunuch came in, and, kneeling down, informed Her Majesty that the boats for the ladies were ready to take them across the lake to see the temple. This action on the part of the eunuch was owing to his having received a signal from one of the court ladies, which implied that Her Majesty was getting tired of the conversation and wished to change the subject. I must explain that on every occasion, when a foreign audience was taking place, one of the court ladies was always told off to watch Her Majesty, and whenever she appeared to be displeased or tired of any particular subject under discussion, she, the court lady, would give the signal to the head eunuch, who would break in upon the conversation in the above manner, and thus save the situation from becoming embarrassing. So Her Majesty said good-bye to the ladies, as she thought it would be too late for them to have to return to say good-bye, besides which it would give them more time to see the various sights. The ladies then proceeded to the island in the Empress Dowager's pleasure boat, known as the Imperial Barge, previously described, and visited the temple. This temple is built on top of a small rock, in the center of which is a natural cave, and it was generally supposed that no human being had ever been inside of this cave. The Empress Dowager believed the popular superstition that this hole was the home of the King of Dragons, from which the temple derives its name. End of Chapter 12. Read by J. C. Guan, Montreal, January 2009. Part A of Chapter 13 of 2 Years in the Forbidden City. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by J. C. Guan. 2 Years in the Forbidden City by Princess De Ling. Chapter 13. The Empress's Portrait. Part A. After staying a little while at the temple, we returned to the palace, and the ladies said good-bye and took chairs to the palace gate, where their own chairs were waiting for them. I then went to report to Her Majesty, in the usual way, what had been said by the visitors, whether they had expressed themselves as being pleased with the reception they had received. Her Majesty said, "I like Mrs. Evans. I think she is a very good woman. It seems to me that her manners are quite different from those of the other American ladies whom I have met. I like to meet people who are polite." Then, referring to the subject of the portrait, Her Majesty said, "I wonder why Mrs. Conger has this idea. Now please explain to me what painting a portrait really is." When I explained that it would be necessary for her to sit for several hours each day, she was excited and afraid she would never have the patience to see it through. She asked me what she must do during the sitting. So I explained that she would simply have to pose for the portrait, sitting in one position all the time. She said, "I shall be an old woman by the time the portrait is finished." I told her that I had had my own portrait painted during my stay in Paris, by the same artist Mrs. Conger had proposed should paint her own portrait, Mrs. Carl. She immediately told me to fetch the portrait of myself, so that she could examine it and see what it was like. So I gave the order right away to a eunuch who was standing by to go to my house and bring it. Her Majesty said, "I do not understand why I must sit for the portrait. Couldn't someone else do it for me?" I explained to her that as it was her own portrait and not that of somebody else they wished to paint, it would be necessary for her to sit herself. She then inquired whether it would be necessary for her to wear the same dress at each sitting, also the same jewels and ornaments. I replied that it would be necessary to do so on each occasion. Her Majesty then explained that in China it was only necessary for an artist to see his subject once, after which he could start right away and finish the portrait in a very short time, and thought that a really first-class foreign artist should be able to do the same. Of course, I explained the difference between foreign portrait painting and Chinese, and told her that when she had seen it, she would see the difference and understand the reason for so many sittings. She said, "I wonder what kind of a person this lady artist is. Does she speak Chinese?" I said that I knew Miss Kyle very well, and that she was a very nice lady, but that she didn't speak Chinese. She said, "If her brother has been in the custom service for so long, how is it that she doesn't speak Chinese also?" I told her that Miss Carl had been away from China for a long time, that in fact she had only been in China for a very short time altogether, most of her work being in Europe and America. Her Majesty said, "I am glad she doesn't understand Chinese. The only objection about this portrait painting is that I have to have a foreigner at the palace all the time. With my own people gossiping, they might tell her things which I don't want anyone to know." I told her that would be impossible, as Miss Carl did not understand Chinese at all. Neither did any of the people at court understand English, with the exception of ourselves, my mother, sister, and myself. Her Majesty answered, "You must not rely too much on that, as, after spending a short time at the court, they will soon learn to understand each other." Continuing, she said, "By the way, how long will it take before this portrait is finished?" I told her that it depended entirely upon how often she sat, and how long each time. I didn't like to tell her exactly how long it would take, as I was afraid she might consider it too much bother. So I said that when the artist arrived, I would tell her to get along and finish the portrait as quickly as possible. Her Majesty said, "I don't see how I can very well refuse Mrs. Conger's request. Of course, I told her, as you know, that I would have to consult with my ministers, just to give me time to think the matter over. If you know all about this artist lady, and think she is quite all right to come here to the palace, of course she may come, and I will tell Prince Qing to reply to Mrs. Conger to that effect. First of all, we must talk over what we are going to do, for to have a foreign lady staying in the palace is out of the question altogether. As a rule, I always spend the summer at my summer palace, and it is so far from the city that I don't think she will be able to go to and from the palace every day, on account of the distance. Now, where can we put her? Someone will have to watch her all the time. This is such a difficult matter that I hardly know what to decide upon. How would you like to look after her? Do you think you could manage it in such a way that no one at the palace will have a chance to talk with her during the daytime, but who is going to stay and watch her during the night?" Her Majesty walked up and down the room, thinking it over for quite a while. Finally she smiled and said, "I have it. We can treat her as a prisoner without her knowing it. But it will all depend on your mother, your sister, and yourself to act for me in this matter. Each of you will have to play your part very carefully, and mine also. I will give orders to have the palace garden of Prince Zhong, the Emperor Guangxu's father, fixed up for Miss Carl during her stay here. This palace garden is quite close to Her Majesty's own palace, about 10 minutes' drive. It is not in the palace ground, but is quite a separate palace outside the summer palace." Continuing, Her Majesty said, "Now, you will have to come with her every morning, and return to stay with her every night. I think this is the safest way out of the difficulty, but be careful with regard to all correspondence which she may either receive or send away. The only thing about it is that it will give you a lot of extra work, but you know how particular I am over things of this kind, and it will save a lot of trouble in the end. There is another thing you will have to be very careful about, and that is to watch that Miss Carl has no chance to talk with the Emperor. The reason why I say this is because, as you know, the Emperor is of a shy disposition, and might say something which would offend her. I will appoint 4 extra eunuchs to be in attendance during the settings for the portrait, so that they will be on hand in case anything is wanted. Her Majesty then said, "I noticed that Mrs. Conger was watching you when you pulled my sleeve. I wonder what she thought of it. You needn't care anyway. Let her think anything she likes. I understood what you meant if Mrs. Conger didn't, and that is all that is necessary." I told her that perhaps Mrs. Conger thought I wanted to advise her to refuse this request, but Her Majesty said, "What does that matter? If it hadn't been that you knew the artist yourself, I would not have consented in any case. It is not the painting of the portrait that I mind, but it might give rise to serious results." The next morning I received a letter from Mrs. Conger, begging me not to prejudice Her Majesty against Miss Carl in any way. I translated this to Her Majesty, and it made her furious. She said, "No one has any right to write to you in such a way. How dare she suggest that you would say anything against Miss Carl? Didn't I tell you she was watching you when you pulled my sleeve? When you reply to that letter, tell her whatever you like, but answer in the same way she writes herself. Or better still, you write and inform her that it is not customary for any court lady to try and influence Her Majesty in this country, and that, in addition, you are not so mean as to say anything against anybody. If you don't like to say that, just say that, as Miss Carl is a personal friend of yours, you certainly would never think of saying anything against her." I therefore replied to Mrs. Conger's letter in the ordinary way, making it as formal as possible. Her Majesty then talked of nothing but the portrait during the whole of that afternoon. By and by, she said, "I hope that Mrs. Conger will not send a missionary lady with Miss Carl to keep her company during her stay at the palace. If she does, I will certainly refuse to sit." The next morning, the eunuch arrived with my portrait, and everyone at the court had a good look at it before I took it to show Her Majesty. Some of them were of the opinion that it was very much like me, while others thought the painting a very poor one. When I informed Her Majesty of the arrival of the portrait, she ordered that it should be brought into her bedroom immediately. She scrutinized it very carefully for a while, even touching the painting in her curiosity. Finally, she burst out laughing and said, "What a funny painting this is! It looks as though it had been painted with oil." Of course, it was an oil painting. Such rough work I never saw in all my life. The picture itself is marvelously like you, and I do not hesitate to say that none of our Chinese painters could get the expression which appears in this picture. What a funny dress you are wearing in this picture! Why are your arms and neck all bare? I have heard that foreign ladies wear their dresses without sleeves and without collars, but I had no idea that it was so bad and ugly as the dress you are wearing here. I cannot imagine how you could do it. I should have thought you would have been ashamed to expose yourself in that matter. Don't wear any more such dresses, please. It has quite shocked me. What a funny kind of civilization is this, to be sure. Is this dress only worn on certain occasions, or is it worn any time, even when gentlemen are present?" I explained to her that it was the usual evening dress for ladies, and was worn at dinners, balls, receptions, etc. Her Majesty laughed and exclaimed, "This is getting worse and worse. Everything seems to go backwards in foreign countries. Here we don't even expose our wrists when in the company of gentlemen. But foreigners seem to have quite different ideas on the subject. The Emperor is always talking about reform, but if this is a sample, we had much better remain as we are. Tell me, have you yet changed your opinion with regard to foreign customs? Don't you think that our own customs are much nicer? Of course, I was obliged to say yes, seeing that herself was so prejudiced. She again examined the portrait and said, Why is it that one side of your face is painted white and the other black? This is not natural. Your face is not black. Half of your neck is painted black too. How is it? I explained that it was simply the shading and was painted exactly as the artist saw me from the position in which she was sitting. Her Majesty then inquired, Do you think that this artist lady will paint my picture to look black also? It is going to America, and I don't want the people over there to imagine that half of my face is white and half black. I didn't like to tell her the truth, that her portrait would in all probability be painted the same as mine, so I promised Her Majesty that I would tell the artist exactly how she wished to be painted. She then asked me if I knew when the artist proposed commencing the portrait. I told her that the artist was still in Shanghai, but that Mrs. Conger had already written to her to come up to Beijing, to make the necessary preparations. 1 week later, I received a letter from Miss Carl informing me that she proposed coming up to Beijing at once, and that she would be delighted if Her Majesty would allow her to paint this portrait. I translated the letter to Her Majesty, who said, I am very glad that you know this lady personally. It will make it much easier for me. You know, there may be some things which I may want to tell Miss Carl, but which I don't want Mrs. Conger to know. I mean that there might be certain things which I shall have to say to Miss Carl, which, if Mrs. Conger heard of them, would give her the impression that I was very difficult to please. You understand what I mean. As this lady is a friend of yours, you will, of course, be able to tell her things in such a manner as not to offend her. And I may tell you again that if it were not that she is a personal friend of your own, I would not have her here at all, as it is quite contrary to our custom. On the third day of the second fifth moon, Prince Qing informed Her Majesty that the artist had arrived at Beijing and was staying with Mrs. Conger, and wished to know Her Majesty's pleasure in regard to commencing the portrait. Now, I must explain that the Chinese year varies as to the number of moons it contains. For example, 1 year contains the ordinary 12 months, or moons. The following year may contain 13 moons. Then the 2 years following that may contain 12 moons only, and 13 moons the next year, and so on. At the time of the proposed visit of the artist, the Chinese year contained 13 moons, there being only 2/5 moons in that year. When Prince Qing asked Her Majesty to name the day on which Miss Carl should commence her work, she replied, I will give her my answer tomorrow. I must first consult my book, as I don't want to start this portrait on any unlucky day. So the next day, after her usual morning audience, Her Majesty consulted this book for quite a time. Finally, she said to me, According to my book, the next lucky day will not occur for another 10 days or so, and handed me the book to look myself. Eventually, she picked out the 20th day of the second fifth moon as the most lucky day for beginning the work. Next day, she had to consult the book again in order to fix the exact hour, finally fixing it on 7 o'clock in the evening. I was very much worried when she told me that, as by that time it would be quite dark, so I explained to Her Majesty, as nicely as I could, that it would be impossible for Miss Carl to work at that hour of the day. Her Majesty replied, Well, we have electric lights here. Surely that would be sufficient light for her. Then I had to explain that it would not be possible to get such good results by means of artificial light, as if it were painted during the daytime. You see, I was anxious to get her to change the hour, as I was sure that Miss Carl would refuse to paint by means of electric light. Her Majesty replied, What a bother! I can't paint pictures myself in any kind of light, and she ought to be able to do the same. After much discussion, it was finally settled that 10 o'clock on the morning of the 20th day of the second 50 moon should be the time for Miss Carl to commence to paint this portrait, and I can assure you that I felt very much relieved when it was all settled. When the eunuch brought in my portrait, he also brought in several photographs which I had taken during my stay in Paris, but I decided not to show them to Her Majesty in case she should decide to have a photograph taken instead of having this portrait painted, as it would be much quicker and save her the trouble of sitting each day. However, as Her Majesty was passing on the veranda in front of my bedroom the next morning, she stepped into my room just to have a look around, and, as she put it, to see whether I kept everything clean and in good order. This was the first time she had visited me in my own room, and I was naturally very much embarrassed, as she very rarely visited the rooms of her court ladies. I could not keep her standing, and I could not ask her to sit down in any of my own chairs, as it is the Chinese custom that the emperor and empress should only sit down in their own special chairs, which are usually carried by an attendant wherever they go. I therefore was on the point of giving an order for her own stool to be brought in, when Her Majesty stopped me and said that she would sit on one of the chairs in the room, and so bring me good luck. So she sat down in an easy chair. A eunuch brought in her tea, which I handed to her myself instead of letting the eunuch wait upon her. This, of course, was court etiquette, and was also a sign of respect. After she had finished her tea, she got up and went around the room, examining everything, opening up all my bureau drawers and boxes in order to see whether I kept my things in proper order. Happening to glance into one corner of the room, she exclaimed, "What are those pictures on the table over there?" and walked across to examine them. As soon as she picked them up, she exclaimed in much surprise, "Why, they are all photographs of yourself, and are very much better than the picture you had painted. They are more like you. Why didn't you show me them to me before?" I hardly knew what to answer, and when she saw that I was very much embarrassed by her question, she immediately started talking about something else. She often acted in this manner when she saw that any of us were not quite prepared for any of her questions, but she would be sure to reopen the subject at some future time, when we were expected to give a direct answer. After examining the photographs for some time, which, by the way, were all taken in European dress, Her Majesty said, "Now these are good photographs, much better than the portrait you had painted. Still, I have given my promise, and I suppose I shall have to keep it. However, if I do have my photograph taken, it will not interfere at all with the painting of the portrait. The only trouble is I cannot ask an ordinary professional photographer to the palace. It would hardly be the thing." My mother thereupon exclaimed to Her Majesty that if she desired to have her photograph taken, one of my brothers, who had studied photography for some considerable time, would be able to do all that was necessary. I would like to explain that I had two brothers at court at that time who held appointments under the Empress Dowager. One was in charge of all the electrical installation at the Summer Palace, and the other, her private steam launch. It was the custom for all the sons of the Manchu officials to hold certain positions at the court for 2 or 3 years. They were perfectly free to walk about the grounds of the palace, and saw Her Majesty daily. Her Majesty was always very kind to these young men, and chatted with them in quite a motherly way. These young fellows had to come to the palace each morning very early, but as no man was allowed to stay all night in the palace, they of course had to leave when they had finished their duties for the day. When Her Majesty heard what my mother said, she was very much surprised, and asked why she had never been told that my brother was learned in photography. My mother replied that she had no idea that Her Majesty wished to have a photograph taken, and had not dared to suggest such a thing herself. Her Majesty laughed, and said, "You may suggest anything you like, as I want to try anything that is new to me, especially as outsiders can know nothing about it. She gave orders to send for my brother at once. On his arrival, Her Majesty said to him, "I hear that you are a photographer. I am going to give you something to do." My brother was kneeling, as was the custom of the court, whilst Her Majesty was addressing him. Everybody, with the exception of the court ladies, had to kneel when she was speaking to them. Even the Emperor himself was no exception to this rule. Of course, the court ladies, being constantly in attendance, were allowed not to kneel, as Her Majesty was talking to us all the time, and it was her orders that we should not do so, as it would be wasting a lot of time. Her Majesty asked my brother when he would be able to come and take her photograph, and what kind of weather was necessary. My brother said that he would go back to Beijing that night to fetch his camera, and that he could take the photograph at any time she desired, as the weather would not affect the work. So Her Majesty decided to have her photograph taken the next morning. She said, "I want to have one taken first of all in my chair, when going to the audience, and you can take some others afterwards." She also asked my brother how long she would have to sit, and was surprised to learn that only a few seconds would suffice. Next, she inquired how long it would be before it was finished, so that she could see it. My brother answered that if it were taken in the morning, it could be finished late in the same afternoon. Her Majesty said that was delightful, and expressed a wish to watch him do the work. She told my brother that he might select any room in the palace to work in, and ordered a eunuch to make the necessary preparations. The next day was a beautiful day, and at 8 o'clock my brother was waiting in the courtyard with several cameras. Her Majesty went to the courtyard and examined each of them. She said, "How funny it is that you can take a person's picture with a thing like that." After the method of taking the photograph had been fully explained to her, she commanded one of the eunuchs to stand in front of the camera so that she might look through the focusing glass to see what it was like. Her Majesty exclaimed, "Why is it your head is upside down? Are you standing on your head or feet?" So we explained, when the photo was taken, it would not look that way. She was delighted with the result of her observations, and said that it was marvelous. Finally, she told me to go and stand there, as she wanted to have a look at me through this glass also. She then exchanged places with me, and desired that I should look through the glass and see if I could make out what she was doing. She waved her hand in front of the camera, and on my telling her of it, she was pleased. She then entered her chair, and ordered the bearers to proceed. My brother took another photograph of Her Majesty in the procession as she passed the camera. After she had passed the camera, she turned and asked my brother, "Did you take a picture?" And on my brother answering that he had, Her Majesty said, "Why didn't you tell me? I was looking too serious. Next time, when you're going to take one, let me know, so that I may try and look pleasant." I knew that Her Majesty was very much pleased. While we were at the back of the screen during the audience, I noticed that she seemed anxious to get it over, in order to have some more photographs taken. It only took about 20 minutes to get that particular audience over, which was very rare. End of Part A of Chapter 13. Read by J. C. Guan, Montreal, January 2009.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.